believe. Assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener, because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The Two-Way Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
And good morning, everybody. It is a beautiful Monday. It happens to be the 22nd of June, 2009. Welcome to the show. I get an email from a buddy of mine. It's funny. He emails, and we live about a mile and a half apart. He shoots me off an email, something about wanting to go sight in his AR-15. He got a brand-new ACOG for it, which those of you who don't know what an ACOG is, you may hear the term. It stands for Advanced Combat Optical Gun Sight, made by Trijicon. They're pretty much designed for the military to use in the Iraq theater. And they go on top of an AR-15. Different ACOGs are built to different specifications. He got a really nice one. As a matter of fact, he's got an FFL license, so he's able to get things for his own cost, which is pretty nice. And he's putting this brand-new, really nice ACOG on top of a LaRue AR-15, which is pretty nice. We built that thing up to Ronin status. And as a matter of fact, I'm the one who assembled the lower form. It's a really nice piece, good gun. So even though he's got all this good stuff, he's really not that much of an experienced shooter when it comes to the defensive nature of things. So we go in to sight in his AR-15. And that's really when it hit me. I just realized sometimes I overlook things. Like if I've ever run a course and we have new shooters in there, we go through the sight-in process because I expect we need to go through the sight-in process. The thing is, a lot of people don't really understand how to sight in. And they may just go forever and ever wasting ammo and still never end up with a good sight-in until you get somebody that really knows how to shoot the gun. You get down behind the thing, you do your deal, and the bullet misses. It just doesn't hit where it should. And the other, whoever has the gun says, well, you know, all guns sight in a little differently. Yeah, not really. There's very, very little difference. If you have two people that know how to shoot, then there's really very, very little difference that in any gun, any set of a gear, that will go from one shooter to the next. As long as you know how to shoot, regardless of the position that they hold, or what, the exact gun with the optics on it, whatever it is, or the sights, you're going to get pretty much the same zero. Very, very little difference. So we're going to talk just a little bit about that, about how to do this. First of all, you need to make sure you've got the same ammunition. You're going to sight in with the same ammunition you're going to use. To have one ammunition for sight in and then use a different ammunition is counterproductive because you're not going to be sighting in with the same stuff. It's going to fly differently. It's going to have a different pattern on the paper. It's going to fly through the air differently, and it's probably going to have the harmonics when it goes down the barrel a little bit different as well, especially if you're changing weight. If you're changing any bullet design, the same thing holds true. I know a friend of mine who sells ammunition at his job, and he said he had somebody come in and buy a 150-grain full metal jacket 308 to sight in with, and a 180-grain PowerPoint to hunt with. Two completely different animals that are going to sight in completely differently. They could be off as much as a few inches. So we don't want to do that. So we're going to go through how to do this and kind of my stories to how this went on the range yesterday. So stay tuned through the break. This is your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
Right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443. Uncle Sam taught him to shoot me.
Okay, so to sight in the average rifle, okay, we're going to talk AR-15s, 30-06, everything in between. The bullet, the line of the bullet and the line of sight work a little bit differently. A lot of people are under the misconception that when a bullet leaves the muzzle, it rises up, meets the line of sight, and then goes back down. That is absolutely untrue. For the bullet to actually rise up once it leaves the barrel is not possible within the laws of physics. The way that the sights and the bore line actually work out, and I'm going to dramatize this just a bit, would be like that of the old school hot rod with the really big tires on the back and the really small tires up front. The back end's a lot higher up. So the sights actually sit in that same orientation, not quite to that degree of the old school hot rod, in relation to the line of bore. So as the bullet travels out, it's going to travel out in a flat trajectory for a bit, and then it's going to drop off. But the line of sight's actually facing down. To get the line of sight to face your target, you've got to lift the gun up. Now, as it appears, your line of sight is straight onto the target, but the muzzle is actually elevated ever so slightly. So what happens is the bullet travels up, not because a bullet jumps upwards once it leaves the muzzle. It's because the barrel itself, the bore line, is literally elevated in relationship to the sights, the way that you hold the gun. And it crosses that line of sight in two places, right about 50 yards, and then again right about 200 yards. Different bullets of different weight, different caliber, different grains, different pressure, different speed, are a little bit different within a few yards each way. However, they generally cross right about 50 and then again at 200. So between 50 and 200, at a maximum of about 110 yards, that's where a bullet it will impact a little high. From 0 to 50 yards, it's going to impact low. Beyond 200 yards, it will impact low. And again, between 50 and 200, it will impact high. At its peak, at about 110 yards. Now, all of this, if you keep within about a 250-yard range, is going to happen within about a 6-inch circle. All right, all of this is going to happen at the peak at 110 yards. You'll hit, yeah, I don't know, maybe about an inch and a half high. Depends on the bullet, the caliber, how high the sight is above the line of bore. Let's take all of this down, and what you do is you get a rough sight in at 50 yards, because that's where the line of sight and the line of the bullet path intersect the first time at 50 yards. So you get a good sight in at 50 yards. Then you go back to 200 and you confirm it and make any small, minute adjustments now that you've quadrupled the distance between 50 and 200. That's the way you sight in. You can get a good sight in at 50 yards and call it good. It's best, however, if you go back to 200. So we get this LaRue setup. We go prone, get some sandbag on top of an ammo can, another sandbag under the back end. Get a good solid prone position. When you do that, you want to have your feet flat. You do not want to be on your toes, because any little bit of movement in your foot, be it from yourself twitching or a little bit of wind or your buddy kicking you in the back of the foot, whatever it might be, is going to throw off your ability to hold the gun steady, and your sights are going to move. Bore is going to move. You're not going to get a very good sight in. So once you get the feet flat, you get down there, get behind the gun. And this is the way it works with breath. There's a lot of different thoughts on breath. Some people just breathe and shoot. Some people breathe in, hold when they've got lungs filled with air, and then they shoot. Here's the right way to do this. And you'll find any world-class shooter doing this technique. There's two pauses in the breath cycle. And that is a momentary pause at the top when you inhale, and a momentary pause at the bottom once you've exhaled. Depending on how much air you breathe in, depends on where your chest is when you have that momentary pause when you inhale. And you can have a short breath or a long breath. And whichever one you've got, when you're laying down on your stomach, on your chest, and you're prone behind a gun, That's going to change where the bullet impacts. If you hold your breath there with the inhalation pause, then it will when you exhale. Whenever you exhale, you get rid of the same amount of air. Your lungs are at the same bottom resting position, regardless of how big of a breath you took. So the right way to do this is to breathe in, pause, breathe out about halfway through that breathe-out cycle, or maybe two-thirds of the way through that breathe-out cycle. You start adding pressure to your trigger. Once all of the air is expelled from your lungs, you get a momentary pause, 3 to 5 seconds when you're sighting in, when you're shooting at distance, 3 to 5 seconds. As you continue to get that press, achieve your surprise break. That means the gun goes bang when you don't expect it to. And you get that during that 3 to 5 second pause. That's not in 3 to 5 seconds. That's between 3 and 5 seconds. If you hold it too long, you're going to start getting kind of starry-eyed, seeing the little squigglies going. Once you see that, you got to back off the trigger, take a few breaths, and try it again. Breathe in. You pause. Breathe out. Start adding pressure. Bang. That's when you get a good shot. That's the breathing cycle when you're shooting prone and you've got a distant shot to make. That's what you do. So once we've got that done, and you're getting good solid hits at 50 yards, you're sighted in. You move the whole thing back to 200 yards between your muzzle and your target. Laser rangefinders are fine. Pacing, if you really know your pace, measure it out if you need to. You know, if you're already on a range which is organized and already lined out, you know, at distance, then great. So at 200 yards is where you will perfect it. Now, you might find at 50 yards you are dead on. At 200, you might need to adjust for the bullet having landed 3/4 of an inch or an inch or an inch and a half to one way or the other, which you really couldn't see at 50. So you get that dialed in, it's good to go. I got to tell you, with Scott's gun, I think we fired maybe a total of 35, 40 rounds, which is more than we needed to. Also, what you want to do is you want to do a 3-round group. So fire a 3-round group. Don't just go off one round and adjust, one round and adjust. That's a mistake a lot of shooters make. You have to do a 3-round group. And where the average bullet shot placement would be within that group, that would be, yeah, that has to be considered your center. So then you would adjust, be it left, right, up, down, wherever. You also need to make sure, especially with a scoped rifle, but for all guns, make sure that the thing is perfectly vertical and horizontal. You don't want the gun canted, because then when you adjust for windage and elevation within your sights, if it's canted, you're basically adjusting against the grain. It's got to be perfectly level when you sight in. So there's a few tidbits for you. Scott's gun was actually holding sub-minute of accuracy. At 50 yards, he was holding about a 3/8 inch of a group with just cheap ball ammo going through the thing, just 55-grain full metal jacket ammo, a 3/8 of an inch group at 200 yards. Just so you guys understand, I've talked about it before, I'll clarify again, minute of angle essentially is measured in 1 inch at 100 yards for layman's terms. 1-inch group at 100 yards. If you have a gun that will shoot, if you have a rifle that'll keep a pattern, a 3-shot group, at 1 inch for those 3 shots, within a 100-yard shooting distance, sight-in distance, then you've got minute of angle, or if it's smaller, it's called sub-minute of angle. And that's really good. Really, the best of guns will do that. For a sniper, precision rifle, designated marksman, they're going to want to have sub-minute of angle. Some even profess, some gun manufacturers, Accuracy International is one of them, they will claim a half-minute of angle for every gun leaving the factory. Quite honestly, every Accuracy International rifle I've ever seen that is shot will hold a half inch at 100 yards with a 3-shot group, regardless of caliber. High-end stuff. Well, this AR-15 was doing that. In its setup, Ronin style, battle setup, it's got a LaRue upper, it's got a LaRue lower, and we assembled the LaRue lower. We put a couple of things into the LaRue upper to get it a Ronin status, and the thing is just absolutely driving tacks, and it's reliable. You can't get any better than that. If you have a reliable gun that is also a very accurate gun, you are just smoking. So we had this whole thing sighted in, the whole process, explaining the whole thing, getting it all done within about an hour. And then Scott actually went back up later that afternoon and spent about an hour on the range doing some defensive shooting with the gun. We'd done some exercises before, so he was up there shooting. And just was absolutely joyous when he called me later in the afternoon yesterday and said, man, this rocks. Went up back up to the range, shot for about an hour or so. You know, just things are smoking. The gun is dialed in. My technique is getting where it needs to be. This is fun. I'm really on top of this. And, guys, that's really, guys and gals, that's really when shooting is fun. That's really when things are dialed in. When you're in a high, I refer to that as a peak. And when you're having a hard time with the gun, you're in kind of a valley. So these peaks and valleys, that's when you're peaking and things are really, really good. Now, keep in mind, good reason to have a good semi-auto battle-style rifle with as many rounds as you can carry that's reliable and pretty darn accurate is because if you're expecting a gunfight, the rifle is man's best friend. The rifle is woman's best friend as well, ladies. You should have a good, solid rifle, and you should have the skills to be able to shoot it. A handgun is for if you do not expect a gunfight, and one surprises you, you're ready for it. Shotgun's pretty good, but not at distance. So keep that in mind. That's a closer quarter sort of an instrument. Rifle is if you're ready for a perceived or a known threat of a gunfight coming to you. So keep that in mind. Stay tuned through the break. This is Bill Carnes on 2A Radio.
Responsible people have no business owning a gun or listening to this show. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
Welcome back. I got to tell you, there's a lot of things that drive me nuts. And one of the things that absolutely drives me nuts is when there's information that's been made available. And when someone takes that information and they manipulate this information to try and get their point to be the one, I guess, accepted by everybody listening to them. And that point might be vastly different than the actual information at hand. The Violence Policy Center has done exactly that. Now, VPC is vehemently anti-gun. Now, they don't really care at all about gun rights. Oh, yeah, we support the Second Amendment with, you know, what do they say, like reasonable gun control measures. They don't care about that. That's an absolute lie. Absolutely, totally, absolute, completely BS, total lie. They want all guns to disappear forever, always. And they're going after yours first. Okay, so Violence Policy Center, VPC, got a hold of this report that the General Accounting Office of the federal government came out with, and it has to do with the guns in Mexico deal. So their headline says, over 90% of Mexican crime guns originate in U.S. That's the VPC's headline. Now, when you read that, you think exactly what it says. Of course, as you go through it, in fact, it's 87% of the actually traced guns, which is a small percentage of everything. In fact, what it comes down to is 17% of the guns are traced to the U.S. Also, what they don't go into is where these guns came from. Most of those came through the DCS, direct commercial sales, from legitimate sources in the U.S. through the United States State Department for approval in Mexico and other South American countries that then end up through corruption in those countries in the hands of these cartels. And then they eventually, some of them, end up in the hands of the Mexican federales, and then some of them gets given to the ATF. A few of them have actually been through straw purchases through the southern border of the U.S. Very few, but still some of them are there. So the Violence Policy Center, VPC, comes out and gives all of this BS. Now, they do put in the qualifier, as traced by the Federal Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives over the last 3 years. That is in there, but in a smaller area. So, of course, their goal is to get guns away from people, whether it's through legitimate or illegitimate reporting or purposes. So they're taking a legitimate report from GAO and making an illegitimate claim of over 90% of Mexican crime guns originate in U.S. In fact, all guns and all crimes, when it comes to Mexico, have nothing to do with all these guns. I would imagine if you actually took that statement on its surface, it's not even close. Because the point of this report was within the Mexican drug cartels, essentially around the border violence. So totally false, completely misleading. I have a real problem with certain portions of the First Amendment of the United States. Because when the Founding Fathers wrote the First Amendment, they didn't see that society would go into such a cesspool gutter that it is now, that people would be capable of doing what they do. They had no idea how low a lot of people in society would sink back in the day. They probably would have all just stuffed their muskets under their chins and off themselves if they could have seen what's going on today. I can only imagine. So the freedom of the press, that allows absolutely rampant runs of press releases and people within the press corps. Accuracy of the press, free accuracy of the press, is what I believe it should be. There should not just be freedom of the press to go do whatever they want, because now Violence Policy Center, as they do a press release, they're now under that freedom of the press, and they can sit there and lie their heads off because they're free to do so. Now, do they incur some potential civil liabilities? Yes, but all they have to do then is print a retraction. So accuracy of the press, accuracy of a free press is really what it should be. Of course, you get editorials and things such as that where you can throw in all your bits and pieces. But this thing, this whole just modge podge of garbage that they put through based on the government accounting report of what's happening with these guns, according to the U.S. government. Now, can we trust them? Yeah, sure. They've shown themselves really trustworthy. But for VPC to take this and manipulate this headline into something it's absolutely not is shameful. And I cannot stand when individuals and groups operate in this manner. That is shameful to themselves. It's shameful to us as a society, shameful to us as a country, shameful to us as a race on planet Earth when we get enough people operating on the low road. Guys, try to find the on-ramp and join the rest of us up here on the high road, because that low road garbage is not good for this country. My two cents on that deal. We have a few things coming up related to some law enforcement incidents coming up in the next segment, and what is going to be, again, Bill's riot of the day. So stay tuned through the break so you can hear me spout off about some things in the law enforcement arena when we come back from the break.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Rule one, assume it's loaded. Rule two, don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule three, listen to the 2A radio show with Bill Carnes. 1-800-313-9443.
With Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
You want to see me burst a brain vessel? Let me tell you how to do that. What you do is you get somebody who is a certified, authentic law enforcement officer, and they break the law on a regular basis or on a flagrant basis where they know they're breaking it. They use their authority under the color of office to commit crime. That, to me, is one of the most despicable things that a human being can do. Get yourself into any position of authority, and you use it, rather abuse it, for your own gain through acts of crime. That drives me bonkers. I have said before, and I will say it again, anybody who is an elected official, hired into the government, appointed, whatever it is, and you're entrusted with either the public safety, public trust, whether it's legislative, executive, judicial, law enforcement, whatever it is, and you do something in violation of that color of office, and you get convicted of that, you should serve triple the sentence that's handed down by the judge. You do something, judge says, 10 years. You should be sentenced, mandatory, triple sentence, 30 years behind bars. I also believe absolutely no parole or probation for that. Any fine that's handed down, let's say it's 10 years and $100,000, it's now going to be 30 years and $300,000. Not like you're going to make 300 grand in prison. Hopefully, you've got some umbrella insurance that somebody's going to collect. That is my 2 cents on the deal. That is how important this is. Listen to these following stories. There are a couple of cops. I shouldn't even say cops. They're law enforcement officers. Wait until you hear who they are. Out of an area called McIntosh, Oklahoma. McIntosh County. They acknowledged extorting $12,000 from motorists. Two guys. People driving around, they toss their car, go through their stuff, keep the cash, send them on their way. Under the threat of, don't come back this kind of boy. Who were these two law enforcement officers? Why didn't the sheriff do something about it? Why didn't his undersheriff do something about it? Because it was the sheriff and the undersheriff committing these crimes. Ex-sheriff now, Terry Allen Jones, 36 years old, and former undersheriff Michael Travis, Michael Travis Brookshire, 38 years old, each pled guilty to one felony count of conspiracy to interfere with interstate commerce under the color of office. That is a federal crime. The U.S. Attorney's Office has it. They also facing state crimes. Now, this is just where they're saying $12,000 cash from motorists during traffic stops during a 19-month period. They tried to get a bunch from an undercover FBI agent, which was actually the sting, which they were busted through. So the sheriff and the undersheriff were the ones doing this. How about that? It reminds me of a little scene in the movie Vacation with Chevy Chase, National Lampoon, where he's getting extorted from a mechanic. And he says, I wonder what your sheriff would think about your business practices. So what does the guy do? He pulls out and shows him his own sheriff's badge. Yeah, there you go. So that comes out of Oklahoma. No, trust me, we're not done yet. How about this? Police officer pleads guilty to possessing child porn. In New Richmond, Wisconsin, the story came out, where a police officer pled guilty to possessing child pornography while on duty. Anthony Miller of New Richmond entered a plea in St. Croix County Circuit Court this last Thursday. The State Department of Justice says agents served a search warrant at Miller's New Richmond house in December of 08, this last December. DOJ said that Miller worked as an officer in Hastings, Minnesota, and admitted he downloaded and traded pornographic pictures of children while on the job. Agents said Miller traded images of child pornography through a file-sharing program and searched the Internet for child pornography while on the clock. For me, triple sentence for this guy. Triple sentence for the sheriff and the undersheriff. Triple sentence for this guy. How about this? This now coming out of Denver, Colorado. Two of Denver's finest place in order. Listen to this. Placed an order at a McDonald's drive-thru in the early morning hours of May 21st, just a month ago, distressed over what they perceived to be unsatisfactory service, the officers became agitated, and one of them flashed his police badge and pointed his pistol through the drive-through window in a threatening manner before driving off without paying. If you are a cop and you get so agitated at 1 o'clock in the morning, 2 in the morning, that your sausage and egg McMuffin and your stale coffee takes too long, that when you finally get it, you show them that you're a cop and then point a gun at them and then take off without paying. Let's see. As far as I'm concerned, you should be arrested for impersonating an officer, because that is not the act of a law enforcement officer. Take the badge out of the equation. Have you in civilian clothes. Point the gun at somebody and then leave. Guess what? You get arrested for all kinds of felonies. The officers involved in the incident have been placed on administrative leave with pay, that is, a paid vacation, while the county prosecutor decides whether to file felony menacing charges against them. Any private citizen who did the same thing would already be in jail and facing those charges. Cops should not get a free walk. They should be prosecuted, and if found convicted, they should get triple the sentence. Ding, 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 both of these guys. So now that's five cops so far just in this segment. Now keep in mind, most cops are good cops. It's the few bad apples that spoil the bunch. And the bad apples should be made example of in Bill Karn's book. Now, Louisville, Kentucky. A Louisville police officer has been placed on paid administrative leave after being arrested in Florida. Louisville Metro Police spokesman said that Lieutenant Gerald Pfeiffer will remain on leave while an internal investigation is completed. Lieutenant. Now, that's pretty high up in any police department, is a lieutenant. You got an officer. Sometimes they'll have a corporal or a field training officer. Then you get a sergeant who's a supervisor. Then above him, you get a lieutenant who supervises sergeants who supervise the people on their squads. So lieutenant's fairly high up there. Pfeiffer, 43, was arrested this last Thursday in Florida and charged with false imprisonment, battery, aggravated battery with a deadly weapon. And aggravated battery with a deadly weapon, according to online jail records. He was being held in Hillsborough County Jail this last Friday. The spokesman, Mitchell, says Pfeiffer's arrest followed a domestic dispute, but he did not have details. Messages left for Florida's Highway Patrol and Pfeiffer's attorney were not returned for comment. The Courier-Journal reported that Pfeiffer was suspended for 25 days in 2003 after crashing his personal car in a drunken driving incident in Louisville. So the guy has a drunk driving, crash the car incident about 6 years ago. And now he's in Florida in jail, a police lieutenant in jail, charged with false imprisonment, battery, and aggravated battery with a deadly weapon. This guy, if he gets convicted, triple the sentence. Ding, 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 ding. Big loser. You take your police authority out of Kentucky and expect to throw your weight around in Florida? Let me tell you, law enforcement officers have to follow the same laws that you have to follow. They're not above the law. Nobody's supposed to be above the law. I would venture to say there's probably at least 150,000 people in this country that operate above the law, maybe a quarter million, based on their job, their perceived status, elected into a position. They operate above the law. So there's six so far. Now, here's another one. 33-year-old former officer in Gwinnett County, I don't know what state that's in, is facing charges after allegedly tasing an employee of a Waffle House. Two additional officers have resigned from the force in connection with the incident. The incident is said to have happened in Loganville earlier this year. The accused is identified as Corporal Gary Miles, a six-year veteran of the force. Miles resigned his position earlier last week. He's charged with one count of battery and one count of violation of oath of office by a public officer. Now, truth be told, over half the cops in America could be fired for violation of oath of office by a public officer. Let me tell you how. It's because when they go to court and they testify, oftentimes they're working on hunches. If they find what they want so that they can arrest somebody and try to prosecute them, when it comes to prosecuting, what they do is they back the clock up a little bit as if something happened to make them know more before they acted on the hunch. The hunch worked out. But the hunch isn't enough to put somebody in jail, to prosecute somebody. Hunch isn't enough. So once they find the information, they're able to back their story up as though they knew something when they really didn't beforehand. I've seen it happen countless times when I was a cop and had to go in and testify, and I refused to do it. So a couple of times, people walked. I told the prosecutor, look, if your case is not strong enough to prosecute based on my arrest was good enough to arrest him, but if you cannot prosecute on how strong my arrest was, then let him go, because I am not going to perjure myself up on the stand. I will not do it. And I was told by a couple of different district attorneys, assistant district attorneys, that it happens all the time. You know what? That doesn't make it right. If we walk behind some kid in school and smack him in the back of the head with an encyclopedia all the time, it doesn't make it right. It makes all of us numb to doing something stupid that we shouldn't be doing. I don't know. Maybe some people do deserve to get smacked upside the back of the head with an encyclopedia on a regular basis. Let's start with people in Washington, D.C. who hold, say, public office. Continuing, two other officers said they have been present during the tasing incident. They have resigned. Gwinton Police Corporal David Shirali says 39-year-old Joey T. Parkerson and 41-year-old Christopher T. Perry were both sergeants assigned to the South Precinct, so supervisors. An administrative investigation is ongoing. Ding, 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 ding. Three more guys. Done. Triple the sentence. Now, these guys all quit. I don't know if they quit to avoid a further investigation or not. Who knows? How about this one? Texarkana, Texas. Immigration officer arrested on drug charges. Police say a federal immigration officer faces drug charges after his arrest by local authorities. Michael Clay Spurlock, 39 years old, of Bunker, Arkansas, a law enforcement officer with the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, agency, was arrested this last Wednesday, according to the Arkansas side police of Texarkana, Texas. That is one city which straddles the Texas-Arkansas border. And, of course, they have different governments and, you know, different city councils, different police. But it's essentially one. It's like Lake Tahoe, where it straddles Nevada and California. Nevada is officially called State Line Nevada, Tahoe, California. Now it's one city. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. The arrest followed a traffic stop that resulted in a brief foot chase when Spurlock got out of his car and fled. Spurlock faces felony charges of possession of a controlled substance, possession of drug paraphernalia, simultaneous possession of a firearms and narcotics, and misdemeanor fleeing the police. This is a federal officer. He gets convicted. Ding, 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 ding. Triple the sentence. Send this guy up the river. We need to start setting examples of cops gone bad. Bad cops gone bad. Set a positive example of what we're not going to tolerate. Not like this jackass in New Jersey that's chasing a speeder at nearly double the speed limit, blows right through a stop sign, slams into a minivan, and kills a 17-year-old and a 19-year-old girl, sisters, and gets off. He had to pay like $770, $760-something, in court fees for the killing two young ladies. Because this New Jersey State Trooper, I read the story last week on Wednesday or Thursday, New Jersey State Trooper drops the hammer trying to chase his speeder to collect a little bit of extra revenue in the municipal pocket of the little township he was in. Blows through a stop sign in the 35 zone at 65, slams into a van, kills these two girls. Now, if it wasn't a cop chasing a speeder, who, of course, he didn't pay the speeding fine because this cop didn't catch him, because he's in the process of killing two people. If that were you or I blasting through a stop sign at 65 and killed two girls, what would have happened to us? Ding, ding, ding. We would have been in prison. This guy is back on the street. Do you want that guy holding a badge, having the color of office, and trusting him to public safety, allowing him to have firearms? Do you want that guy out there? The answer is no. I am not anti-cop. I am about as pro-cop as you can get, except for the cops that break the law and try to take authority more than what they've got into their own hands. That is what drives me nuts. And I am not above placing a cop who does something like that under citizen's arrest while they're on duty and forcing a situation to where they are under citizen's arrest and they're going to have to answer to me and my charges as I go in to prosecute them for oppression under the color of office. I flat guarantee I'll do it. I've threatened two cops on duty with it, both of whom backed down because they knew I knew more than the average bear. End of the ride of the day, folks. Stick around through the break. This is Bill Carnes on 2A Radio.
Gun control, loved by dictators since 1917. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
And welcome back. Hopefully you enjoyed my tirade in the last segment. I got to tell you, concealed weapons permit holders are probably, as a group, some of the biggest supporters of law enforcement. Because people that carry handguns concealed, they got to go through the process to get their CCW, their concealed weapons permit. They generally are much more law-abiding than any other citizen. They are generally much more aware than any other citizen. And they're generally trying to make sure they are not involved in some sort of incident where they're going to need their gun. And are quite pro-law enforcement. The thing that really kind of gets me is when law enforcement groups, associations, whatever, do their best to join in the anti-CCW crowd when it comes to things like such as California with the Mother May I sort of issuance for concealed weapons permits there. Their Assembly Bill 357 that got shot down earlier this year, pardon the pun, would have turned California into a shall-issue state rather than the may-issue state. And the shall-issue status, CCW holders support cops, but the Association of Police Chiefs and Sheriffs in California did not support the bill, which means they did not support as a whole, not all cops, just the association and the chiefs and sheriffs within, did not support you guys in California that want to carry. Same thing in Illinois and in Wisconsin and in Hawaii and in all the other states that don't have good CCW laws. The police chiefs and sheriffs don't support you, no matter how much you support them. So, how do we handle this? Well, police chiefs work for city councils and mayors. Sheriffs, on the other hand, are elected. So what you do is you find somebody who's qualified to be a good, solid sheriff. Look up Sheriff Mac. Sheriff Mac. Google Sheriff Mac. And listen to some of the things this guy has to say. He's all over YouTube. Good, solid guy. Find somebody like him and support them in running for sheriff where you live. And if enough counties do that, and enough county sheriffs, and if you're able to convert some police chiefs, say, you know what, concealed carry is a good thing. They can take it and back bills at the state level with the assembly and the Senate, your state legislators, and they can back them and say, look, we want this. We are your law enforcement chiefs and sheriffs, and we believe that this sensibly written, good, solid piece of legislation as a shall concealed carry issue piece of legislation standalone is good. We support it. We want you to put it through. You're going to get it. But until you get the right people in office and the right law enforcement agencies and people, you're not going to get it. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Lock and load and head out packing today. Have a great day.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The 2A Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.